Thursday, February 20th. First reading from Genesis chapter 9, verses 1 through 13. God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, "Be fertile and multiply and fill the earth. Dread fear of you shall come upon all the animals of the earth and all the birds of the air, upon all the creatures that move about on the ground and all the fishes of the sea. Into your power they are delivered. Every creature that is alive shall be yours to eat. I give them all to you as I did the green plants. Only flesh with its lifeblood still in it you shall not eat. For your own lifeblood too I will demand an accounting. From every animal I will demand it, and from one man in regard to his fellow man I will demand an accounting for human life. If anyone sheds the blood of man, by man shall his blood be shed, for in the image of God has man been made. Be fertile then and multiply, abound on earth and subdue it." God said to Noah and to his sons with him, "See, I am now establishing my covenant with you and your descendants after you, and with every living creature that was with you, all the birds and the various tame and wild animals that were with you and came out of the ark. I will establish my covenant with you, that never again shall all bodily creatures be destroyed by the waters of a flood. There shall not be another flood to devastate the earth." God added, "This is the sign that I am giving for all the ages to come, of the covenant between me and you and every living creature with you. I set my bow in the clouds to serve as a sign of the covenant between me and the earth." Haydock Commentary. God confirms the dominion of man over all animals, though he must exercise it now by compulsion and fear, since they will not now obey without reluctance as they would have done in the state of innocence. The more religious had hitherto abstained from flesh, being content with herbs, etc., which had been expressly granted. Now the salt waters of the flood had vitiated the earth, its plants were no longer so nutritive. God gives leave to eat flesh meat, but with some restriction that we may still learn to obey. The blood or life of animals is reserved to be offered in sacrifice to him instead of the life of man. See Leviticus 17:11. The apostles required this law to be observed by the first Christians so that the Jews might not be disgusted, but after a suitable time had been allowed them, the church thought proper to alter this discipline. God had not subjected Cain to the law of retaliation that he mentions here, as he was the first murderer and the earth was unpeopled. Here he declares that it is just to inflict such a punishment on the offender. Judges are hence authorized to punish murderers with death. The general law, "Thou shalt not kill," admits of exceptions and forbids killing by private authority or out of revenge. The covenant of God is made with animals only inasmuch as they are subservient to man. The Egyptians adored most of them, and many Eastern nations and even philosophers pretended they had intelligent souls and could speak a rational language. This was the case of those great impostors Apollonius of Tyana and Muhammad and others. The rainbow had existed from the beginning, but it was not before appointed as a sign that the earth should no more be destroyed by water. It is styled God's bow on account of its beauty and grandeur. St. Augustine says, "As the rainbow which makes its appearance in the clouds borrows all its effulgence from the sun, so those only who acknowledge the glory of Christ in God's clouds and do not seek their own glory will escape destruction and the deluge." The Gospel from Mark chapter 8, verses 27 through 33. Jesus and his disciples set out for the villages of Caesarea Philippi. Along the way he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" They said in reply, "John the Baptist, others Elijah, still others one of the prophets." And he asked them, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter said to him in reply, "You are the Christ." Then he warned them not to tell anyone about him. He began to teach them that the Son of Man must suffer greatly and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed and rise after 3 days. He spoke this openly. Then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. At this he turned around and, looking at his disciples, rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan. You are thinking not as God does, but as human beings do." Haydock Commentary. When the apostles firmly believed that Jesus was the Messiah and the true Son of God, he saw it necessary to let them know he was to die an infamous death on the cross, that they might be disposed to believe that mystery, and that they might not be too much exalted with the power given to them and manifestation made to them. Peter rebuked him out of a tender love, respect, and zeal for his honor. Christ calls him Satan, Satan meaning adversary, and he applies it to Peter because he opposed, out of mistaken zeal, Christ's passion, without which the great work of man's redemption could not be effected. Peter unknowingly and innocently raised an opposition against the will of God, against the glory of Jesus, against the redemption of mankind, and against the destruction of the devil's kingdom. He did not understand that there was nothing more glorious than to make of one's life a sacrifice to God. Because of this episode, our separated brethren conclude that Christ did not, in calling Peter the rock, appoint him the solid and permanent foundation of his church. This conclusion, however, is not true, because, as St. Augustine and many theologians affirm, Peter could fall into error in points regarding morals and facts, though not in defining or deciding on points of faith. Moreover, as St. Jerome says, St. Peter was not appointed the pillar of the church until after Christ's resurrection. And it was not until the night before Christ suffered that he said to Peter, "Behold, Satan hath desired to have thee, but I have prayed for thee that thy faith fail not, and thou, being once converted, confirm thy brethren."